the Enlightened Entrepreneurs. My name is Angie Fox. I've been a business owner since the age of 19, and I love being my own boss. Let me tell you about my co-host, Malcolm. He is infectious. You will crave his thoughts and love his voice. Now, but when we interview, if I could only get a word in edgewise, Malcolm.
Hey, Angie, it's good to be with you. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Welcome, folks, to the Enlightened Entrepreneurs. Good to be with you here. And you know, I've known Angie for quite a few years, and she is one of the smartest and strongest women I know. Classy, brilliant. Hey, she even handpicked me to co-host. It ought to be a blast, guys. Let's do it, Angie.
Well, Malcolm, we have a really amazing lady who is our guest today. Her name is Sheila McDevitt. She is a natural-born leader and a real spitfire. I mean, a stick of dynamite. I mean, I got a chance to meet Sheila, and she absolutely blew me away and thought she'd be a perfect guest for our show today. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She retired from Tico Energy as the Senior Vice President General Counsel, so she's an attorney, where she was responsible for the legal compliance, governance, diversity, and communications departments. In addition to that, her legal practice of Sheila McDevitt, she is also on counsel of the top Tampa office of the law firm of Ackerman and Shenterfit, working in corporate practice group. So obviously she has some amazing credentials. She's worked in energy. She is full of energy, and we can't wait to interview her today on The Enlightened Entrepreneurs.
Welcome, Sheila. It's good to meet you today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Are leaders born or are they made?
I think a little of both, but honestly, I think a leader can learn to. Good leaders learn to be leaders, and maybe they have a little bit of propensity towards leadership. But mostly, it's developed, learned, and honed through experience.
Yeah, so it comes through your experiences, and I'm sure you would agree that it also comes through your failures, Sheila. You mean, you fall down, you got to pick yourself up, you got to move forward,
oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. I have, I could, if I were thinking about it, I could list several handfuls of those.
Of failures, yeah. I bet you I would beat you on that category. Go ahead, Angie.
Well, Sheila, you know, speaking of that, is there any particular lesson that you learned from a failure that really sticks out in your mind?
Well, yes, and I think that it was a hard one to learn, and that is, you know, you need to take stock of yourself and recognize those areas in which you are not at your best, and come to terms with yourself before you can do anything that helps other people. So those are the hardest things to do, I have found, when you have to really look yourself in the mirror and say, I don't like what I see. And that's a metaphor, too. I'm not talking about looks or anything, but when I assess myself and I say, you know, there's a great big piece of me that truly needs improving, and then you have to go about the very difficult task of doing that.
Well, you know, you just mentioned look in the mirror. I mean, I just had a conversation the other day with somebody, Sheila, and somebody was saying to me that they lacked the confidence, clearly. They did not like themselves. They didn't like where they were. They didn't like what they were doing. And my advice to that person was, let me tell you what. You need to get up in the morning. You need to look in the mirror. And if you don't like who you are, you need to change it. Because if you don't like who you are and know who you are, nobody else is going to know or like you either.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, and it's probably fundamental to this entire topic we're discussing. And probably the most difficult thing somebody can do is to face themselves and say, hey, I've got these flaws and I need to fix them. And then go about a program of trying to fix them. And, you know, some things you'll be able to solve, and other things will always be like a stone in your shoe all your life, and you just have to be aware of them and try to pick up some habits that allow you to moderate some of those things.
We're talking with Sheila McDivitt, who is an attorney and counselor. Sheila, I have a question for you about how did you have your first big break? Was it somebody who gave it to you? Was there an aha moment? What stands out in your mind as your first big break?
Well, I think probably my first real job after college. I graduated from college in 1967, and I was in Tallahassee, and it just so happened that my father had gone to law school with a man who was in charge of the Legislative Reference Bureau, but it was the total staffing for the legislature at that time. It was before the passage of the 68 Constitution. He said, I'm not going to help you, but this man has this job, and this is his name, and you can say, you're my daughter. I called this man cold and said that my father, Frank McDevitt, had given me his name, and I was looking for a job, and I had just graduated, blah, blah, blah. So he set up an interview with me, and I thought, well, he's being kind. But I went in, interviewed for the job, and I think they were, you know, this woman's movement had not really begun, but it turned out that a couple weeks later, he called and offered me a job as a legislative research assistant, and so I took that job, and I was like the first woman to ever work in a non-clerical capacity in that agency.
Awesome.
And from that, we developed all the new rules and staffing patterns for the legislature since it changed so much under the 68 Constitution. From that, I was able to go on and have other legislative jobs for a very long time. But during that time, I met so many people who were important and powerful in the state then, and who emerged over time because, you know, my peer group who were doing similar jobs, they turned out to be very important people too, much more important than I ever turned out to be. But I think that I would say that David Kearns, who ran that agency, gave me my first big break, because from that, I learned so many things, developed self-confidence that I never had before, and went on to have different legislative jobs both here and in Georgia, and then realized that I had no upward mobility in that environment, so I had to either do something completely different or go back and get some more education, and that's when I decided I'd go to law school. That was about seven to eight years after I had graduated. So he really was the guy that gave me my first shot and taught me so many things that in every job I've ever had, I have proved useful because they required so much multitasking, quick response, research skills, the need for preparation, things like that.
Well, listen, we all think back to who gave us our first break. I mean, you think back to that, and, you know, I did immediately as you were talking toward the end. I started thinking back, and you know what came to my mind right away is Uncle Bernie. Uncle Bernie, man, he believed in me and really was somebody who gave me a big break early on, and we all have those people in our lives, but, you know, it's a lesson to all of us, too, today, is that we need to reach out and give other people a break and give them a break to step up and improve their lives. So, well, listen, it's Malcolm Out Loud here and Angie Fox. We're going to be back. We'll take a quick pause here with Sheila McDivitt. And I want to talk about cardinal rules. What is it? What is the cardinal rule to being a great leader? Be right back right after this pause. We are back with you here. It's Malcolm Out Loud and Angie Fox. We are joining Sheila McDivitt, and we are speaking to her, gaining all her knowledge and experience here. And, you know, I mentioned before the break about the cardinal rules of leadership. Now, Sheila, I was saying to you before we came on the show, I kind of gauge leadership and entrepreneurship as very much interchangeable, because a lot of the skill sets we learn are interchangeable in these two worlds. And let's face it, great leaders have to work with great entrepreneurs, and great entrepreneurs work with great leaders. So that's just the way it is. I want to ask you, and I think of this all the time, and in fact, I've got some other lessons on this I'm going to share with folks at the end of our show, but what is your cardinal rule today, Sheila, to becoming a standout leader?
Well, I really think there's two things that are fundamental. One is a very strong set of values that you live and breathe every day, and the people who follow you are also instilled with them, because if you haven't done that much, then you're not really going to achieve to the level that you want to. And the second thing is vision. You have to, as a leader, you have to have vision that you know where you're taking the organization, and not so much how you're going to get there, because that's what the people that work for you are supposed to figure out. But you know the bigger picture, the way to get there, and you encourage people to think outside of the box.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Sheila, that you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it with your answers there, as far as I can see. And I know everybody varies a little bit, but to me, your qualities of leadership are very important, and I'll tell you why. You talk about those core values, and I'm so glad you said that was number one. I think that's critical. For me, Sheila, it was this. I spent 27 years in corporate boardrooms working with people around the world, okay? And one of the things I always did is I delivered on my promises. So that was one of my core values. So if I said to a client it would be done Friday at noontime, well, guess what, Sheila? It was done Friday at noontime. And you know why? Because I never gave a promise I could not fulfill.
Well, I think that's so key, and you don't find that very often anymore. It's very disheartening. And, you know, the way I would try to tell my people, look, you have to tell someone when you're, you know, take, for example, if I was dealing with the lawyers that reported to me, you're going to do this project, and they're expecting to know when they can get it. And as you get into it, if you find out it's a much bigger job than you initially assumed, then you need to give them a call and say, look, this thing is much bigger, and it's going to require this and this and this. And so, therefore, it's going to be 2 more days or 5 more days or whatever it is. But you don't just let people wait till the end of the time frame and then they show up.
You are so right.
And have it done.
You are so right.
That just drives me crazy. But yep. People understand if you let them know.
Yeah, you be honest with people. I mean, you just, you know, I would have enjoyed working with you as a leader, because those are all my principles right there, including the vision thing. I mean, you can't kind of go if you don't have a map and know where you're going. I find, you know, men, for instance, men are horrible with directions, but if I have a little vision and a map, I can get there, Sheila.
Thank God. I have good intuition, but I couldn't read a map unless it talks to me.
Well, see, we'd make a great team. I could read the map, and you'll just tell me where the hell to go.
Right. That's right. That's good. That's what it usually works, as a matter of fact.
What's the next question, Angie?
Well, you know, I was thinking about when we have businesses as entrepreneurs, that we have successes that happen even in our careers. And I know my very first time I had a really decent commercial real estate commission. I'm a commercial real estate broker. I went out and bought myself a Rolex watch. And it's the only watch that I wear to this day. I love when I have it on, because it reminds me of that first big commission when I was 20 years old.
Wow.
Sheila,
wow.
I would love to ask you, in your career, what do you consider your greatest success? And then how did you celebrate?
Oh, my goodness. My greatest success is being successful. And you must think that sounds silly, but there's nobody more surprised about my success than me. And, you know, I would have to say, having joined in a company that was a very almost 100-year institution, I think it was about 85 years old when I began working at TECO. I stayed there almost 27 years, and, you know, I did that legislative thing beforehand about 11 years. And then I was a trial lawyer for 3 years, and then I went to TECO. And so that was a completely different type of environment, because the rest of the stuff was freewheeling. You were kind of on your own as an individual. You worked for an individual member of the legislature. He had his own set of bills and, you know, the things that you had to do every day. And so you set your own agenda. Interesting thing. And the fact that I was able to convince the powers that be that they would be better off having their own internal legal department, and then I began and started up the legal department, and then eventually became an officer, and from that had more organizations reporting to me, and then ultimately became a senior vice president and part of the CEO's group that we planned and strategized the things that happened to the organization. And I think just being able to achieve that much as a woman of the 60s, I guess you'd say.
Hey, quickly, what's your best morning routine? How would you size that up in a minute here?
Well, I like to get up, and I like to still read 2 newspapers and drink my coffee before I do anything else.
Yeah. How many cups of coffee? How many cups of coffee?
It used to be that it was important. Pardon?
How many cups of coffee?
Oh, I drink half caps. So I have half decaf, half regular, and I only drink 2 cups.
You know, they say that actually all the studies I've been reading over the past year, that actually 4, 5, and even 6 cups are actually better for you than 1 or 2 and actually are good for you. Did you know that?
No, but I wouldn't want to see my energy level.
I'll tell you what, I know. People ask me all the time when I'm on, and I say, it ain't anything, hon, let me tell you. So, anyway.
I know.
If I had 1 cup of coffee, you'd have to peel me off the ceiling, so I have to avoid caffeine altogether.
Oh, do you, Angie? Well, I didn't know that.
No, not at all. Maybe a Red Bull, but no caffeine, you know, out of the coffee realm.
Yeah.
Well, I would have to think that Red Bull would be worse than a cup of coffee.
I think so.
Although I've never tried it. So.
Well, even better than just a Red Bull is a Red Bull in a martini. Angie, on that note, I love this next question. What is the question, the next one? I love this one.
If you had 2 minutes, Sheila, to share advice with your 21-year-old self, what would you say and why?
Get with it, Sheila. Recognize these things that you're doing that are not the best thing for you. Work to achieve. Act with, move with a sense of achievement, and hope for the best, and do the best that you can. I mean, I just my 21-year-old self didn't have very good sense, so hopefully my 21-year-old self would have enough quiet to tell the mouth that they ought to calm down and focus.
None of us seem to have that common sense at that age. Angie, I just had a conversation yesterday with my 2 kids. And Sheila, my 2 are 14 and 12. And I was talking to them about the fact, my 12-year-old had said that school was like a prison. And then I reminded him throughout the day. Oh, yeah. And then I reminded him throughout the day what prison was like, although I've never been there. But it can't be too good. And I said, listen, all you kids have to really worry about is doing great work. If you only knew at your age what you would know when you're 30, 40, or 50, you would be amazed. But take a look at where we're at and think about all that you have your whole life in front of you. What do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Where do you want to go? So as a lesson to young people, the whole world is in front of you, and do what you're going to do well. So I try to convince the kids that schoolwork is like, oh man, key important, you know?
Well, I know, and I was very fortunate in that my father kept me on the straight and narrow about school, and so I always believed that. He taught me at a very young age the value of reading, which I appreciate to this day.
Amen, amen.
Yes, and I think so much of that is getting lost today with all of these technological things that they don't write sentences anymore. Nobody speaks the English.
It's a whole new world, Sheila. A whole new world. I mean,
I know that, but eventually you can't get it any worse.
I agree. So, I mean, what I'm saying is if they don't have a phone on, an iPad in their hands, and a computer buzzing through their brain, then they don't feel they're connected. I mean, technology, we are so just consumed with it. And the kids, they don't know a world without it. You know, they laugh when I tell them that I didn't have a phone when I was a kid. I didn't have a computer. And they laugh. They think, well, yeah, you're back in the Fred Flintstone days, Dad. I mean, they really don't know what the world was like. So, you know.
That's what has really changed, because the differences in the generations change has come so rapidly that generations do not recognize what the prior generation knew. I mean, nobody remembers a war. Nobody knows anything about the prior wars. And I mean, I can remember, I was talking to a friend of mine last week who's in his 80s, and he was talking about World War II and the patriotism associated with those people that came home. And I said, you know, it's funny because I'm like, you know, a half a generation younger than he was, but I still recognize and remember those things.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen today. I mean, you just don't have people that remember anything that happened, more than 5 minutes
ago. No, well, because you know why? They have to look at their text. They have to look at their text.
You know, but I was read an interesting article yesterday. There was an interview in the, I guess, Tampa Bay Times of Stuart Sternberg, who owns the Tampa Bay Rays, and they were asking him about how long can you go without your cell phone. And he said, out of season, I can go for days.
Wow,
season, have to have it all the time.
Sheila, let me ask you, what advice would you give to someone starting out on their career path?
Well, I think I would certainly talk to them about being mindful of the use of their technology, that you don't bring it into the workplace and stay on it all day long, that the biggest thing that they can do is build relationships, not only among their own team members, but the people with whom they interact business-wise outside. And those things will do more for them, for their advancement, than any technology is going to do. Use the technology as a tool.
Yeah.
Not as your lifeline.
Well, you're right. It can be technology can be a help and it can be a hindrance, right?
Absolutely. And I think they need to start thinking about very carefully what the differences are. But I think second thing that's almost as much as important as that is that these younger people need to toughen up. I mean, they need to recognize that everything isn't going to go their way, and when somebody looks at you cross-eyed, they don't mean anything by it, and it's not a time for crying or sulking or something. Or if someone tries to tell you that you could do better at something, that's what they're being paid to do. So I think toughening up is something they need to learn.
One would hope they would have learned it. Put on your big girl panties, right?
Pardon?
Pull up your big girl panties.
Yes, absolutely.
Sheila, I would like to ask you, what is the single biggest sacrifice in your career?
Oh, that's really hard to say because you never know what might have happened. But I feel that because of the timing of the things that I did, I may have shortchanged my personal life a bit in favor of my career. Mm-hmm. Although who knows what would have happened, but you know, I started out doing things that women didn't normally do back in those days. And so everything has always been, a little bit more difficult for me until, you know, the world began to change. And, you spend a lot of time worrying about keeping the job and making sure that, you can move ahead and that sort of thing. So I don't know. I always would say probably my personal life and, the fact that I didn't travel and didn't, spend a lot of time socializing and that sort of thing.
Yeah. What are you doing now, Sheila, in your personal life that you truly enjoy?
Oh, I take piano lessons. I play the piano. Wow. I'm playing bridge. I go to baseball games on the weekends. I do a lot of board work, some volunteer work, mostly education related. And so I keep very busy. I enjoy helping people. And I'm able to do some of these fun things that I didn't think I could do.
Okay. Well, listen, Sheila, it's time for what we call the enlightened round. The enlightened round. And so just some questions, some answers, and then a couple of final thoughts from you. What would you say your kryptonite is?
My kryptonite is probably my personality, the fact that I'm impatient. And it sometimes shows its way itself in very unattractive ways. So that's why I say my antidote to my kryptonite is my cat because she keeps me calm.
Yeah, you know what's funny is, Sheila, you are as honest can be, because when we started the interview, before we were live here, I have to tell everybody, Sheila said to me, it was just her and I on the phone, I hadn't got Angie on yet, and we're talking, and Sheila says to me, and I was trying to get Angie in on the call, and Sheila says, well, listen, I've been on a while, when are we connecting? I mean, so yeah, so you're right, that was, she was like...
Yes, it's true.
You're like, all right, fella, time is money, let's go.
I love it. Your personality is absolutely outstanding, which makes you original and attractive to the rest of us as a leader. And that's probably why you've had some of the positions you've held as a woman and breaking through in certain things related to the energy industry because of that. Sheila, you mentioned that you love to read. Is there any book in particular that you would recommend people to have on their nightstand?
Well, I think if I had to pick one book, I'd probably go with the biography of John Adams by David McCullough. And the reason that I would pick that one is because it teaches us so many different things, not only the history of our country, but the ability for those very diverse founding fathers to get along to build a model for democracy and write the Declaration of Independence that has lasted for almost 300 years. But it also talks about relationships, the value of building them, the need for... you know, being able to have your disagreements, live your life, and be successful in so many different ways, and then come back and put those disagreements aside and become best friends and then, interestingly enough, I'm talking now about Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who did were friends, had a big split, and then in their later years became friends again, and then they both died on the same day, which was the 4th
amazing.
Of July.
I got to get that book.
So
I do want to ask Sheila something, Malcolm, if I may. I've noticed when you were talking on the panel the other day, and then also even today, you mentioned intuition. And do you feel like you had a specific, is that specific to it as far as intuition? Do you feel like you may have some abilities, like a sixth sense or something to that effect? Or
no,
describe the intuition?
Nothing like that. I just think that a lot of my experiences have caused me to have a highly developed intuitive sense, so that I am able to have more influence in my decision making. You know, most leaders will tell you, or CEOs will tell you, that 80% of the decisions made are based on gut, which is intuition. You know, you use all this information, that's their tools, and you have it available and you use it, but then you have to come to your own conclusions. And so I found that the fact that I had a fairly heightened sense of intuition helped me move a little bit quicker than a lot of people.
Well, Sheila, thank you for being with Angie and I today. Sheila McDivitt, again, a lot of wisdom. You are a fantastic leader. We will come back. We're going to take a quick pause, and Angie and I will be back with our usual segment of Agree or Disagree. We'll be right back.
Welcome back
in just a moment. Enlightened Entrepreneurs, it's Malcolm Out Loud here. And what a good time it was with Sheila McDivitt. She is an extraordinary leader. So we're now going to have our segment of the show we call Agree or Disagree. I don't think we always should agree. Do you, Angie?
I think one of the best things is to have somebody who disagrees or has a different point of view to your own.
That's it. You learn more from that, I think, than just always agreeing.
You stretch yourself. Yep, you stretch yourself.
Absolutely. So let's stretch ourselves a little bit. Agree or disagree. Well, let me tell you what. With Sheila, she is an extraordinary leader, Angie, and I really resonated with so many things that she said. You know, her point about your core values, to me, is so critical, because we can't be good leaders, we can't be good entrepreneurs if we don't have good core values, whatever they may be. If you don't have good core values, you're in trouble. So you got to sit down, you got to write your core values out. What are they? What are the principles that guide you in this lifetime? What do you want to be? You know,
exactly.
when you grow up, right, Angie?
Mm-hmm.
And so I love her point about the core values. I love her point about the vision, about, you know, again, having a vision. So I thought she was an extraordinary interview, Angie. What did you think?
I think so as well. One of the things when we asked her about sacrifice in her career, and she said her personal life. I myself, as an enlightened entrepreneur, I love being a business owner. I love my career, and I honestly love work. I almost think of it as, because I enjoy it so much, it's not torturous. It's not something I hate doing. I love going to my office. I love the things I have to do during the day. So do I sacrifice personal life things relating to some of the fun I like to do, like golfing or whatever? Or in Sheila's case, she likes to play bridge. She plays piano. I think the thing is, maybe during the period in her younger years, she sacrificed those things because she couldn't, but at least she has her health, and she has the vision now to be able to enjoy those things later in her life, and I think she's making the most of that. So yes, she did sacrifice at the time, but going forward, she's enjoying some of these personal things.
Yeah.
Another thing that Sheila said that I really liked was where she said, you gotta get tough. You gotta have a thick skin of some type. I think so many of us are so worried about being politically correct or offending somebody, and I mean the country almost is getting out of hand as it relates to how hypersensitive people are to these things. So I love it that Sheila said, get tough, grow up, you know, a pair, put on your big girl panties, whatever it might be, and make it happen.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. I do like that toughness as well, Angie. You know, in this lifetime, I want to remind everybody, you have one life that we know of, folks, here on Earth anyways. You'll have other opportunities on the thereafter, whatever your beliefs are. But I will say this, it's important to do what you love to do. It is critical. That's the measurement of really success to me, Angie, is doing what you love to do in the world. So listen, I want to now, each show, we throw something at each other that you don't know about. And I want to throw your mind quickly.
Okay.
Angie. And kind of it's, and I don't know which rule applies to you, but I want to find out right now. It's a great piece I have. 8 cardinal rules to become a standout entrepreneur. And that could be, again, a standout entrepreneur or leader. Again, those words are interchangeable. So 8 cardinal rules. This is a fabulous piece. And you can get all of these. I'm going to tell you where to go to get it. Right on our network at America Out Loud, right where this is running. You'll find right on America Out Loud, at the very top of the site, AmericaOutLoud.com, it's called Hot on Flipboard. Hot on Flipboard. If you go to that piece on the menu, you hit the down arrow, you go to the Enlightened Entrepreneurs. It's a whole magazine I've created there that Angie and I have. Right in there, if you click that, you'll go to Flipboard, and I just posted the article, 8 Cardinal Rules to Become a Standout Entrepreneur. You'll have the article yourself if you go to the site. So, the rules, Angie, and which one do you think applies more to you in your life? Let me tell you what they are quickly. Rule number 1, enjoy yourself and never lose interest in what you do. Enjoy yourself and never lose interest in what you do. Rule number 2, be humble and willing to listen to what others have to say. Well, that's a lesson my mother taught me when I was a kid, Angie. You know, you have one mouth and you have two ears. Use them. You know? So you got to listen sometimes more than you talk, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Rule number 3, love clients and employees as you would love yourself. Number 4, take the right risk at the right time. Rule number 5, never let failure cloud your thinking. That's a big one.
Yes.
Rule number 6, be visible and constantly showcase your potential as an expert in your domain. And number 7, never underestimate competition. And the 8th one, become an expert organizer. So these are the 8, again, cardinal rules. And we asked Sheila what hers was. Out of those 8, is there one that stands out to you, Angie?
Yes, absolutely. Number 2, the one about being humble.
Yeah.
I think even when you're the boss, you have to be flexible and open to listen to what other people have to say. Even if it's somebody who is the lowest paid person in your organization, they still may have something enlightening to share with you and an observation that you may not see yourself just because of the frame of reference you have. So remaining flexible. I think also, too, that serves like our military. There are things that can come up that you have to be able to adjust on the spot in being flexible. So if you can do that in your career and remain humble, you got it made.
Amen. That's good. It's a great article. Again, I encourage everybody to get it. I just put it up on my Twitter feed as well, at Malcolm Out Loud. You'll find it there. But again, AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll find a whole great amount of podcasts there, and you'll see Angie and I there. And this article is on the Flipboard, Hot on Flipboard. You'll find it right there. Angie, what's your takeaway for the moment?
Well, you know, when we asked Sheila today about how she celebrates her successes, she talked about being successful is what was important to her as far as her success, but she never really dived into a specific way that she celebrated her success. Like I mentioned, you know, I bought a watch for myself, which always reminds me of that first big commission I got. So my question to you is, Malcolm, we're always so busy striving and doing better and increasing and, you know, having this motivation. Do you stop to smell the roses? What do you do to celebrate success? And how do you judge that? What do you say, hey, this is a good thing, or this just means I need to keep going?
Yeah, it's an outstanding question. You know, I have to, it's an important one, and these are lessons we learn. I try to enjoy the moment, Angie, whatever the moment is, and I'm very mindful of this. One of the big lessons for Malcolm is to live in the moment, certainly not the past and not the future. It's easier said than done, Angie, what I'm talking about here, okay? And this is one of the biggest lessons in life, I think, that we all have to learn, is to live in the moment, live for today. So for me, it's all about right now. And so I do try to disconnect. I do try to make it extraordinary. So if I'm going to have dinner with some special people or some guests or some friends or some whatever, I want to make it the best dinner it can be, Angie. If I'm going to have a meeting with you, I want it to be the best meeting it can be. The show we just did with Sheila, my goal is to make it the very best it can be. So right. It's always about just trying to create excellence around me. And Angie, I want to share one quote as we wrap up here, which ties to what you just asked me and what I just said.
Okay.
And it's the best quote I bet you'll hear all day, all week, all month, and possibly all year. And here it is. If you're depressed, you're living the past. If anxious, you're living in the future. If you're at peace, you're living in the present.
Wow, that's profound, Malcolm. That's great.
That is profound. So, well, listen, thanks for joining us today on The Enlightened Entrepreneurs. We'll see you next time. It's Malcolm Out Loud.
And Angie Fox. Ta-ta for now.